League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello. Before we start the show, I've got a little request for you guys. A lovely little thing to talk to you about.
We've got something to ask.
So, there are these things called the British Podcast Awards. Now, the British Podcast Awards...
They do exist, believe it or not.
They've got a choice. They've got a listener's choice award for the best British podcast. Now, I know what you're thinking. The best British podcast? Well, that's Sci Guys. And I agree with you.
Second to nobody. Yeah. Sci Guys.
Name another British podcast that is nearly half as good. You can't. Exactly.
So, I'll wait.
What you need to do is to head over to British... What you need to do is to head over to vote.sciguys.co.uk and type in Sci Guys, vote for us, and confirm it by email, and you will have a vote for us in the British Podcast Awards. How crazy would it be if we hijacked that event and went ahead and won the Listener's Choice Awards? We think it'd be pretty cool.
Imagine.
So that's the web address, vote.sciguys.co.uk.
You can see it on screen. You can see it on screen.
UK.
See it on screen right now. Can't they, Jamp?
I will put it on screen if I remember.
You can also find the link in the description. But now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Hi.
This week, we're talking about one stone and general relativity.
Ooh.
One stone.
General relativity?
General relativity?
General relativity.
Come on, this is a... I think you guys should be able to guess it from just this.
One stone.
Einstein.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, yay! Very good.
Very good job. Yeah, we're talking about Einstein and a little bit about general relativity. That's a little bit of a lie. General relativity is a very big topic. So we're only going to touch on it today, and we can do general relativity.
Well, big relative to what?
Very funny. Very good.
James.
If you want to find out about bigs and relatives, you can actually listen to our Patreon bonus episode, which will be out by the end of the month. Now, this episode was actually voted for by our patrons. So this episode is entirely brought to you by our patrons. Thank you, patrons.
Thank you to the patrons for this.
Thank you to the patrons.
Very good topic that we're going to discuss.
Yep, head over to patreon.com/sciguys to sign up and become a patron, and you can vote on topics like this one.
I was just thinking it's mad that the viewers now know what the topics are before me and Luke do.
Oh wow, they do.
They vote for it.
They decide what they are, aren't they? Don't
That's madness.
Fantastic. So shall we just dive right in? We all know who Einstein is. He was a big physicist, not big as in, you know, a big man.
He wasn't humongous.
No, he wasn't humongous. He was fairly normal size as far as physicists
go.
A massive tower above.
Oh no, Einstein. Arr! What are you doing up there?
So no, he was not big in terms of size. He was big in terms of impact. He really left his mark on the physics world, I suppose. And, you know, our world. Everyone is able to, you know, quote Einstein, probably incorrectly. But everyone knows his famous equation, which is...
E equals MC squared.
Yeah, that's right.
I forgot what the E was.
You just cycled through all of the vowels there.
I was going to say G, and I was like, that's not right. That's not right, no.
No. So, yeah, I guess we'll just dive right in. So what do you guys know about Einstein already? Let me know.
He's German.
He was really bad at maths.
Was he?
Yes. Okay. This is one of
both of you are technically incorrect, though.
Relative to other scientists, he was basically like he had incredible intuitions about about science and about physics and about the nature of reality. But he often had to get help from his friends on actually turning those intuitions into theories, into like equations and mathematics.
Now, this is the thing. I'm going to just go out on a limb here. And I'm going to say I wouldn't necessarily take that as 100% truth. I didn't find it in my research, and the only reason I'm saying this is because so often with Einstein, as happens with very famous figures, there's a lot of sort of things that just spread into the public consciousness that may not actually be totally true. So,
well, that's,
you know,
not from the public consciousness. That's from a book I've been reading recently.
Oh, that's totally fine. No, I'm not saying that's not correct. What I'm saying is that watch out for stuff like that. And even if, because the thing is, even if it is in a book, that book was written by someone that might have found that from somewhere else. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying that watch out for stuff on Einstein, because there is a lot of things. People used to say that, oh, he was really terrible in school and all of this. It's just, he was good in school. He was very good at math.
Well, he was a smart cookie after all.
Yeah, in fact, he was really good at sort of sciences, and he was really good at the sciences. I mean, obviously he went on to become a Nobel Prize winning physicist. But yeah. But yeah, that's all I would say about that. And actually, you say he's German.
Is he not?
At the end of his life, he was American.
Oh,
he had American citizenship.
I was going to change it and be like, well, he spoke German. That was his first language. But he was
German.
That will
make all of America English.
Yeah.
Very true.
And maybe your country, where you're from.
They technically are
Australia.
English.
Australia.
I mean, Australia is a little bit English, isn't it?
They technically are. They come from England.
So Einstein was born in Ulm, Germany, on March 14th, 1879. Yep.
He's a 70s baby.
Yes.
Only just.
The other 70s.
1870s. Yeah, which is, well, it's probably about 115 BL. I was going to say BCE, and I'm like, that's not right.
That's not correct.
BL. So Einstein, he grew up in a secular Jewish family. So yeah, Einstein was, he was Jewish. They moved to Munich shortly after he was born. And then later the family moved to Italy in the mid-1890s because his father, who had his own business, started having problems with it. So he just up and went to Italy. But apparently Einstein stayed at a boarding house in Munich to finish his schooling. To finish going to school.
Yeah.
And then when he became, you know, when he turned of age, when he was old enough, he was going to be, he was going to be,
man.
Yes,
he blossomed.
He blossomed into a wonderful young gentleman.
When I picture 18-year-old Einstein, I picture him with grey hair.
Yeah, I can't help but do that.
I'm
just picturing Einstein, but skinnier. You know with teenage like body proportions where they're like
looking
really
exactly
skinny.
The same, just like less wrinkles.
The same mustache and hair.
Yeah, like, exactly the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Exactly. It's odd how you've got one picture of a man and you can only...
clearly does not agree with us. He's got a very disapproving look on his face.
Well, it's not that I think that Einstein didn't look like that as a child. It's just that I've never really imagined Einstein as a kid. But had I wouldn't have pictured him just as an old man, but with a tiny body.
You know, I'm not gonna lie to you right now. As soon as you said Einstein as a kid, right there, I pictured a 5-year-old's body with Albert, like a full
and that's
mustache.
Probably because there's loads of stock photos of like kids dressed up as Einstein with Einstein hair, standing in front of blackboards with long equations on them. That's probably where you've got that image from.
It just doesn't look wrong though, even with a little tweed jacket or something. You know, it looks. Yeah. It looks right. It looks right. It feels right. You're probably right there, Luke. So, Einstein. He was going to be forced into the military. He was going to be sort of, I think, conscripted, I guess. Well, there was military duty that you had to do. And he was like, don't really want to do that.
Don't fancy that.
Yeah. He left his classes. He used a doctor's note to get out of them and said it was due to nervous exhaustion. Yeah. And then went to live with his parents in Italy. And his parents were like, I get why you didn't want to join the army, but also you're a school dropout now. So I've also read that apparently
that's the other thing. People like Einstein dropped out of university, didn't he? He dropped out of school.
Yeah, but the thing is that he dropped out of school and then
never people use it as a bit like, I could be Einstein if I drop out of school.
Well, this is the thing. He dropped out of school and then, I'm just going to scroll and try and find it. He dropped out of school, but he also went to, where is it? Hold on. So he dropped out of school, but then he dropped out of school when he was 16, and he took an entrance exam for the Swiss Federal Polytechnic School in Zurich, and his performance in physics and maths were brilliant.
Ooh.
But his marks in other areas weren't quite so good, so then he went and took additional courses, and was admitted to it in 1896 when he was 17. So you say Einstein dropped out of school. He did, and then he took classes for a year.
Just went to a more advanced
and
school.
And went to another school. Yeah, like, it's like, you could drop out of school and be Einstein, so long as you go to university afterwards. Yeah. Because then, in 1901, when he was 22, he received his diploma to teach physics and mathematics. And look, this is why I'm saying that it might not be true that he was quite bad at maths, because specifically in a couple of places I've read that apparently his physics and math scores were quite good.
I think that the reason why I brought this up and the point I was trying to raise there is that there are two aspects of the frontier of science, which is the actual technical ability, and then outside of that there is the ability to intuit things that don't currently exist in common thought. And there's a book I've been reading, which I sort of dropped a minute ago, which was it's called Reality Is Not What It Seems by Carvello Rovelli, and in that he talks about when you get large amounts of technical knowledge about things that we have come up with, like equations and specifically mathematics, and it can have the effect of putting constraints on your ability to intuit things, because you kind of naturally limit yourself around the confines of the box of the world that you're currently living in. Mentally, the constraints of the current thought, and that sometimes you get somebody who comes along who thinks in a way that's totally different to the established thought. And if you are too hooked on the established thought, then you'll throw those ideas out.
Like a Galileo sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Dante, like these kind of
thinking outside the box.
Yeah. So that's why I mentioned that, was because he supposedly, according to this book, he was able to intuit things for which there weren't equations and there wasn't a branch of mathematics. And that's just something I feel quite strongly about, is intuition versus technical ability. Both are important.
I think what that really comes down to more, in my mind, is less sort of those being opposing forces, and more intuiting something is kind of coming up with a hypothesis. And the technical ability is being able to test that hypothesis. And I think in science, both of those things are incredibly important. You can't test a hypothesis if you can't create one, and you can't test a hypothesis if you don't know how to test it. So, like, a hypothesis is useless unless you've got a way to test it, and equally so, testing methods are useless if you can't come up with a hypothesis. So both are very important, but I would be wary about giving the idea that Einstein was such a brilliant scientist because he was able to intuit things so well, but consequently he wasn't so good at the technical areas. And the thing is that may very well be true. From what I've read, he seemed to be very good at both, and, you know, sort of coming up with ideas that that solved the problems, and then being able to prove those problems that he had solved. And I think that both of those are very important, and I wouldn't want to diminish the sort of the technical ability to the work that goes into that to find the proof.
No, I don't mean to diminish in no way. All I mean is that we are not encouraged in our traditional schooling system. We're only encouraged on the technical path. We're not as much encouraged on the intuitive path. And I see part of our role as a podcast is providing part of that bit as well as the technical knowledge.
Absolutely. And here's the thing about
you can't teach intuition.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you what you can teach is the nature of asking questions. You can encourage that, and I think I genuinely think that if you're listening to this podcast and you're taking it at face value and you're not then asking questions, then you're not getting as much as you can out of it. Take what you learn from this and ask more questions. If you want to ask us questions, send them in. We'll be happy to answer them in episodes and future things, or even in the comments themselves, because that's a key part of science, asking questions and finding answers. So I just want to share an anecdote from school that you know, that this kind of reminds me of, that reminds me of why I really enjoy science, and at the time made me really feel that I could be good at it, and it really got me invested in it in a much deeper sense. So we were talking about the condition where your lungs fill up with water, cystic fibrosis.
Yeah.
Do you know how? Say cystic fibrosis. I think it's cystic fibrosis. You're talking about cystic fibrosis, and obviously that's a genetic thing, and it can be passed down very easily. There's a gene, and we know which gene causes it. And we were talking about sort of genetic methods, and bear in mind at this level, it was sort of the highest level you can do in school, but it wasn't. You didn't. They hadn't taught us a lot by that point. And I remember putting my hand up and saying, "Why don't we just use retroviruses, which are viruses that can kind of rewrite your genetic code slightly to inject themselves in? Why don't we just use something like that and change the people's genes to do it?" And my teacher was like, yeah, that's literally what we're looking into right now. And I was like, oh, that feels great. I had it, like, the fact that I had this idea.
It was an intuition that, yeah, that turned out to be right.
Exactly, that someone else had already come up with. But the fact is that just because someone else has already had an idea doesn't mean that...
No one taught you that.
Yeah, exactly. No one taught me that. It's that kind of thing that really I love about science, being able to piece together different things and come up with a solution. And obviously, in this case, in the world that we live in, there are a lot of solutions that have been come up with already. But if you're able to do that and ask the right questions, well, why don't we do this or why don't we try that? That is so important. And if you're the kind of person that you find yourself asking those questions, I would definitely suggest trying to take a career in science, because you're exactly the right kind of person that we need right now for this world. And yeah, I don't know. That's just a little story from me in school that reminds me of why I like science every now and then.
That's a nice story.
Yeah. So moving back on to Einstein, his dad, Herman, ran an electrochemical factory. Like I said, his mum, Pauline, just took care of him and his little sister. As I said, he won a Nobel Prize for Physics in 1921. When he was younger, he did have challenges with speech, apparently. Supposedly, he didn't speak for quite a while. He spoke very late, apparently, about 3 years old. But he did play the violin, and he was very passionate about music, and he carried that on into adulthood, which I think is fantastic. Yeah. That it's something that we don't think about Einstein as being a violinist, which is just lovely, yeah. You know? He's not just a scientist. He's also good at other things. And he wrote in his memoirs that two wonders really affected him when he was younger. And apparently, according to someone called Hans Joseph Cooper, who was an Einstein scholar, so he was given a compass when he was five. And he was really interested in the invisible sort of forces that made the needle spin and point in whatever directions. And then when he was older, he had a book when he was 12. He got a book on geometry, which apparently he called his holy geometry book. And then he went on to really excel in physics and maths, and didn't do very well in other things. Like I said, left school at 16, started another school when he was 17, and graduated able to teach in 1901, which would have made him, if I'm not mistaken, he would have been 22. In 1901, which is incredible. Graduated able to teach.
Teaching at 22.
It's incredible. But he wasn't actually teaching at 22, because apparently he preferred to... Not many of his professors liked him very much in terms of the fact that he would often elect to study by himself rather than show up to lessons. So, he was very good at it. He had a slightly different way of learning from the others. So instead, in 1901, he started working in a patent office in Bern. And then he worked there for a while. He met his wife in 1902, and they got married, I think, in sort of 1903. They had a daughter, Lieserl, who just disappeared.
What?
We don't know what happened to her.
What?
I've read a few places. What? We don't know what happened to his daughter. Apparently... They could have given her up for adoption. They could have been raised by his wife's relatives, but we genuinely don't know. That's something that's lost to history.
That is so.
As in, it wasn't recorded what happened.
No, it wasn't recorded. We have no idea what she didn't literally disappear. I mean, she could have done. Yeah, she could have done, but we don't know what happened. Yeah. So Einstein was married to his first wife for I think 16 years. They divorced in 1919. And his now ex-wife had an emotional breakdown. And Einstein, as part of the settlement, agreed to give her anything he might get from potentially winning the Nobel Prize, which he would then go on to do 2 years later. And bearing in mind, yeah. Imagine that. That kind of like, I'll give you whatever I win for a Nobel Prize. There you go. And then 2 years later, you're like...
If I win a Nobel Prize.
Yeah. But to be honest, I mean, he probably knew he was going to win one at some point because, let's be real, he was Einstein. So in 1921, as I said, he won the Nobel Prize, but he didn't win it for general relativity or for E equals MC squared. He won it for the photoelectric effect. Explaining that, do you guys know what the photoelectric effect is?
Oh, I imagine
the effect where photons of light will land on a surface and cause electrons to become free of their nuclei.
Yeah, exactly. Photoelectric effect, a phenomenon in which electrically charged particles are released from or within a material when it absorbs electromagnetic radiation. That's quite literally what Luke said. In a more
it happens on like the surface of car bonnets and stuff, doesn't it, on a hot day?
Yeah.
Quite a lot.
Yeah. So basically, a photon hits something and it shoots out an electron. No.
Oh.
No.
That's, we that's no fun.
I mean, but if you could get electric shocks, I think, from something, maybe. If it's had a lot of electrons leave it, you could get like a little.
If there's a lot
charge.
Of electrons built up in it, potentially.
In it, yeah, sorry, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure if that's how that really works.
Cannot see it.
Yeah, no, we can't see it. So Einstein stayed in Germany until 1933 when good old Adolf Hitler rose to power. Now, I'm sure you can probably see the issue for Einstein here, given that his family is Jewish and so is he. And
yes.
Hitler was not a big fan of the Jews. So yeah, he left Germany in 1933 and moved to the US. He got citizenship there in 1940 and was retired by 1945. And 1935, obviously, he was granted permanent residency in America, which is just, it's fantastic. It's weird that we think of Einstein as being quite a German person.
Yeah.
But actually, he spent very little of his time in Germany.
He spent most of his life in America.
What was his relationship with the development of the atomic bomb?
I was about to get onto that, actually.
Wow, so, he does it again.
Well, there we go. So he was quite active in the physics community throughout his time. He actually wrote a letter to Franklin D. Roosevelt warning him that uranium could be used to build an atomic bomb.
Oh, God.
Which I feel like
Franklin D. Roosevelt went, great idea! It's like, oh, my God, America!
Look, Frankie, buddy. You got to watch out, because uranium can make a bomb out of that. And Frankie's like, yeah,
make quite
I
a
suppose
big boom.
You could. Yeah, like...
you might want to be careful with it.
That's such an American thing. Hey, here's the thing.
Bomb.
Don't do this. And the Americans are like,
I'm going to do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, but what if we did it anyway,
but
bro?
But we're the exception to that rule.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I think he was basically kind of saying like, you know, look, if the Germans get onto this, it's going to be bad. And the Americans were like, yeah, but if we get onto it,
It's
going to be good. And so they did it, obviously. So he regretted that. He wasn't a part of the Manhattan Project. Honestly, he was a pacifist, so he probably wouldn't have wanted to join anyway. But also, he was a socialist, and we know how Americans feel about socialists. Not the biggest fans. So on top of that, J. Edgar Hoover, who was the FBI director at the time, just did not like Einstein. He just had a thing against him. He was always
sounds
like keeping
like someone's projecting.
So yeah, he was always keeping an eye out for him. But bear in mind, the US knew that they had to keep Einstein because he did great work. And also, if he went back to Germany, he would have been killed.
Just too good.
It was Einstein was on a list of people to be killed, a German list of people to be killed.
Wow.
What?
As a Jewish scientist, he was a threat to Germany, really. So
you guys know that Einstein was once offered the presidency of Israel.
I was going to get onto that.
Oh, spoiled two and one.
It. Yeah, I can't remember the exact quote, but he basically said, "Yeah, it's not my thing." You know,
hold on to your Einstein facts; they'll probably come up.
Yeah, but yeah,
I think that's all my Einstein facts. Oh, I got one more.
I've been holding on to one.
Well, my last fact is that he was asked about how he feels about being considered a genius, and his quote was something like, "There exists a grotesque difference between people's thoughts about my accomplishments and what I really am."
Oh, that's lovely. I did
my capabilities and my accomplishments and what I really am.
Yeah, we do have a little bit on that later on about the kind of the legacy of Einstein, really, because it is a really big topic to talk about. You know, we think of him as this, we hold him up as this reverent figure in physics, but he was just a man, and we'll find out later on why that might not be the best idea to do. So after he found out about the bombing of Hiroshima in 1945, Einstein was super against the atomic bomb. He and a man called Szilard.
No,
his name is not Szilard. His name is Szilard.
I'm going to call him Szilard.
Call him Szilard. he and a man called Szilard founded the Emergency Committee of Atomic Scientists. And in 1947, Einstein sort of said that working with the United Nations to maintain nuclear weapons as a deterrent to conflict was not a good idea. So he was against nuclear deterrence. If you don't know what a nuclear deterrent is, it's basically saying, look, you have a big stick and I have a big stick. Let's not hit each other with our big sticks. Basically, no one
That's
is going to...
That's why they dropped two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically...
They dropped two bombs.
Yeah, they did drop two bombs, yeah.
To be like, we have more than one.
Well, probably. I don't know. Yeah. They had lots. The fact is that a lot of countries in the world have nuclear bombs just to deter other countries from using their nuclear bombs.
Mm.
Because it's mutually Great. Assured destruction. If someone drops a bomb on you, there's enough time for you to hit the drop a bomb button on someone else, and that'll just destroy the world.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's awful, isn't it? Why can't we just fight wars
That's
with
really
robots?
Scary.
You know? Why don't we just do that? Let's stop killing each other and
Go
let robots...
Terminator. Why not?
Well, here's the thing, right? I think robot wars should replace actual wars. And hear me out, because...
My robots are better than your robots.
That's such an absolutely disgusting liberal, Corey.
Well, okay, look, here's the thing, right? One thing, watching Robot Wars on TV, really fun, isn't it? It's a good show. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's nice, right? It's engaging. Number two, no one needs to die. Number three...
Except the robots.
Well, yeah, the robots don't need to. I mean, you know, you form an emotional connection, so it sucks. But, you know, they're made for war. It makes sense.
It could be conscious.
And number three...
It could suffer.
That's true. Instead of like all of the sort of military and defense spending, people will just put money into making robots, which is cool. I think that's worth it.
That's ideal, always.
That in and of itself, you know, you should do that. But realistically, I think at some point we should transition to, instead of killing each other, just killing robots. And whatever country, you know, runs out of robots first is like, okay, sorry.
You got all my robots,
you know. Because if you start putting people up against robots, they're going to lose. So you're deterred against using people in wars.
Robots won't surrender.
No, they don't. Unless you pack them.
They're not quitters. Unless you program them to
That's what the French would do, isn't it?
I think Corey needs to go back to the live show we did on last week and listen to the section we talked about evolutionary stable strategies and encouraging all the countries to stop engaging in war and instead to engage in robot wars is not an evolutionary stable strategy. All it takes is for one country to go, no, and then we all die.
But the point is that if you start using robots in wars, there's no point in using people because robots trump people when it comes to wars. So it's a step up.
In some regards, they do, yes.
Yeah. Or you just have people piloting the robots, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
in exoskeletons.
No. People like remote. No, like, oh, that's cool. Just drones. I've made drones. Oh, darn it.
Those exist.
All it will take is that for someone to instead install exoskeletons and allow the either allow exoskeletons with the humans on the battlefield, or to allow the robots to make their own decisions and therefore not have to wait for the delay in time between the receive the sending of the signal and receiving a signal, and then suddenly you lose the war.
Yeah, so you know, I'm just saying.
And then
saying,
you're back at just normal war.
I'm just saying, maybe we should if we're not going to give up war, right? Because it seems that as a species, we really quite enjoy a little bit of war every now and then. You know,
we'll fight each other, don't we?
Most of us don't actually, but
no, the majority of us don't, but enough of us do. But yeah, so I mean, we seem to like a good little bit of war every now and then.
It's like the Power Olympics, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, isn't it? It's every few years.
Which nation's the strongest?
Big pissing contest. But I think that instead of having war where people die, because people don't want to give up war, let's just make robots do it. And it's the same thing for everyone else. That way people don't have to die, and the people that like wars can still get their wars.
So what you're saying is we should all agree on something.
Yes.
Which is our inability to do that, Corey, is why we have wars.
Yeah.
But here's the thing,
it's
Luke.
The root of all, yeah. Well, we all agree on having war.
To conclude.
Yeah.
It's a carrot and stick situation. Carrot is war. Stick is robots. You want the carrot, you have to take... Wait, that's not how carrot and stick works. Look,
no,
what I'm saying...
There's a donkey involved.
Look, it's like... Look, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, I think.
Yeah.
Where the medicine is...
A truck full of robots.
Like, the medicine is robots and the sugar is war.
Helps the suffering go down.
I'm just saying robot wars would be much, much safer for everyone involved.
It'd just be cool to turn on the news and see robots fighting instead of people, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And no people have to die.
That's ideal.
Moving on, back to Einstein. So, yeah, Einstein, he was staunchly against the use of atomic weapons, which... Good. I'm glad he wasn't for them, because that's the base level of not being the worst, isn't
it? He was really based.
What a simp.
Oh, good Lord.
A simp for humanity.
He cheated on his wife and married his cousin. I don't think you can call him a simp.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Although giving his Nobel Prize winnings to his ex-wife, that's simp behavior, isn't it?
Everyone has their vices.
Yeah, but not cheating with your cousin. Good Lord. So that's kind of like a little overview on Einstein's life. If you guys want to know any more, have a look into it, because there's lots of things on Einstein. I would just say, be careful about where you look, because there's a lot of misinformation.
Seems
about
to be
Einstein.
A lot of people who want to just make up things about Einstein.
Yeah,
it's one like of Chinese whispers almost.
Yeah, yeah, it's like one of my favorite Einstein quotes. You know, you can't always believe what you read on the internet.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, remember yeah. when he said that?
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter the other day. shall we get on to special relativity?
Yeah, go on then.
Do you guys know what special relativity is?
What's so special about it?
Well, that's relative, isn't it?
I can't remember the distinction between special and general relativity.
Okay, so special relativity is like basically a part of a theory of physics that is sort of built on the theory of relativity. It was kind of obviously in sort of not invented, but formed by Einstein.
Hypothesized.
Yeah. So in 1905, he kind of conceived it and published it. And it's central to the physics that we use today. It's central to modern physics. So I'll just give you guys a quick overview of relativity. Again, this deserves its own episode. So it will probably get its own episode. This is just a quick overview because we can't talk about Einstein without briefly talking about relativity. So the special theory of relativity, effectively, it says that in the vacuum of space, the speed of light is always the same, regardless of the movement of the observer. So what this basically says is that light is always moving at 3×10⁸ meters per second in a vacuum. That is just one of the things. Light is moving at that speed in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. That is the speed limit of the universe. Nothing can break that speed limit, really. Yeah? We got that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So that kind of changed the way that we kind of looked at the universe. Space and time, before that, we thought of as two separate things, two sort of separate dimensions. Whereas this kind of led to the idea of space-time, where space and time can't be separated from each other, but there's sort of one thing, and that one thing is space-time. I say one thing, there's this sort of intrinsically connected thing called space-time. So Einstein, that also kind of brought up the idea that measurements of distance and time both change as you get closer to the speed of light. So that's the idea of the faster you move, the slower time moves for you.
Yeah.
So if you were to, if you were to move really, really fast, if you were to move really, really fast, like say half the speed of light, and you had a clock, you were holding a clock, and you know you had a clock sitting still, not moving the speed of light, the clock that you're holding would show a completely different time to the clock that you left sitting still.
It would tick slower, wouldn't it?
It would tick slower. Yeah.
The one going at light speed.
Yeah.
It would tick slower relative to the other clock.
Yes.
But
exactly.
For the clock, it's ticking at the correct
speed. But if you're holding it, it would just look like it's ticking normally.
Yeah.
It's just such a weird thing to wrap your head around. Because
It's okay. So the thing is, the issue is that we think of time as being completely constant. And for the observer, time is constant. Yes. But time is not constant from different points of view, effectively. Bear in mind, no matter how fast you move, time is always moving at the same speed for you, sort of thing. And realistically, you can't get up close to the speed of light, because as you move faster, as you approach the speed of light, your mass sort of increases, and the energy that you need to move at that speed increases to the point where it's just not possible to move at the speed of light as something with mass, really. So
like to double your speed requires 4 times more energy. And so as you get faster and faster and faster, you require infinitely more energy to go even a tiny bit faster.
Yeah, exactly. So and this leads to a lot of really interesting and cool things. Obviously, like I said, clocks are running and slower, and even lengths appear to get shorter as you approach the speed of light. And this has got so many different aspects and facets to it. I've actually linked some videos from, I think, Minute Physics in the description, which describe this really well. But it's a really big topic, so it's fine if you can't wrap your hand around it. Effectively, what it means is that as you move closer to the speed of light, sort of time slows down for you, although it still feels the same speed.
To you.
Yeah, to you. But for everyone else in the universe, your time
is
slowed down.
You're going really slow.
Well, no, you're not. You're going really fast, but your time is—it's very complex. So, if you were to move, okay, if I was to move,
you'd be moving fast.
Yeah, if I was to move at the speed, like close to the speed of light,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, time goes slower for you. It's very difficult to explain. It's difficult to wrap your head around. Luke, do you look confused? Not look confused.
No,
you
want
to say something?
So, one of the ways you can start to understand what you said earlier about how light the speed of light remains constant, is that if you were in a car and you had the headlights on, and you're driving at, say, you're stationary, and you turn the headlights on, light moves away from the headlights at the speed of light, right? Now, if you then started driving and you drove faster and faster and faster until you were at half the speed of light, say, you would think, like, with our like basic understanding of how that might work when we try and conceptualize of it, that you would be moving at half the speed of light, and so you would be catching up with the light that was coming out of your headlights, or it would be moving at half the speed of light because you're going half the speed of light, and so and it's going at the speed of light, but actually relative to you, the light still moves away from the car at the speed of light.
So yeah, I think what this, yeah, what this,
so weird,
an easy way, yeah, to, as a sort of more context for that, the way that we normally think of speed and sort of increasing speed is that, let's say you're on a train and you're standing at the front of the train and you throw a sort of, let's say you throw a tennis ball, or you fire a, let's say you fire a gun, right?
Yeah.
At the front of the train, relative to you, the let's say the bullet is traveling like 100 miles an hour, right? If someone is not on the train and the train itself is traveling 50 miles an hour and the bullet's traveling and the bullet comes off the front of the train traveling 100 miles an hour, then relative to someone that's standing stationary, the bullet is moving at 150 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because those things stack. You know, that doesn't work for light. So, yeah, if you were to, like, if you were to throw a ball from the car, that ball would be traveling at the car speed plus the ball's, like, plus, you know, the ball's throwing speed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas light doesn't travel at the car speed plus light speed. Light just always travels at light speed in a vacuum, which is ridiculous to wrap your head around. That is a constant.
And so the way that that works mathematically is that instead of light, if you were driving at the speed of light, half the speed of light, and light was moving away from you at the speed of light, instead of, relative to the person who's not in the car, light moving at 1.5 times the speed of light, instead, time changes.
Mm-hmm.
The speed of time changes instead.
Yeah.
Because nothing can exceed the speed of light, which is just so messed up and weird.
And or distance changes as well. That's the thing. You need to remember that speed is equal to distance over time.
Yeah.
So if the speed is not allowed to change, then the distance or time must change. So
it's almost like we've like broken reality.
It sounds fake. It sounds like we were like, well, we've decided the speed of light is constant, so how does it work? And that is kind of what it is, but also it is kind of how our universe works. Like, or that's our best understanding of how our universe works. That to keep the speed of light as a constant, time and distance change to match to make light move at the speed of light in a vacuum. Are you confused?
Not entirely. It just hurts my head.
Yeah, it's difficult to say the least. And it's not only that. So that's special relativity. That kind of is building on general relativity. And what general relativity basically says is that gravity isn't necessarily the way we'd normally think of gravity. Gravity is sort of warping of space-time. So an easy way to think of this is if you kind of got a blanket, kind of if you're holding up the four corners of a blanket, right?
Yeah.
And you drop a bowling ball into the blanket, it's going to make a sort of indent in the blanket, right? And if you drop another ball in that blanket, it's also going to make an indent. And those balls are going to be drawn to each other because they're both pushing down the blanket.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of the blanket as space-time and the balls as being sort of planets or stars, that's kind of how it works.
They're making the dip in the blanket.
Yeah.
But in a 3D dimension space that we can't see.
They're making a 3D dip.
That's the issue. We can't necessarily describe this in enough dimensions because we can't perceive enough dimensions to describe this.
So with the analogy with the blanket, that is like a 2D plane and the bowling ball is warping it through a third dimension.
Yeah.
With this analogy, are we then saying that planets in a 3D plane are warping it through a fourth dimension, and that's why they're attracted to each other. That's gravity.
That's actually perfect. That's a perfect explanation.
Right. Okay.
Is this theory suggesting that this is what actually happens, or is that this is an effective way to do the maths?
I think it's what we it says. So what we perceive as the force of gravity between two masses actually comes from their warping of space and time.
Right.
I think the theory states that it comes from the warping of space-time.
weird. Because the thing that I don't understand about that is that when we say that analogy of a blanket, right, we are saying like it makes an indent in the blanket. And then obviously if you drop something on there, it will fall into that indent. But the reason it falls into that indent is because of the force of gravity. And so I don't understand how you then move that up to four dimensions with a three-dimensional objects in a fourth-dimensional world, and you somehow take out the force of gravity and just say, well, that's just the warping is just there.
I think it's because, well, gravity is still a force that's acting on that. So I suppose...
Right, okay. Yeah. No, I do understand, actually. Sorry, no, I've just been doing the modeling in my head, and I understand.
And again, like, again... This is the thing. This is quite complex stuff. So I mean,
Einstein took a lot of his life.
Yeah,
thinking about this, didn't he?
Yeah, I would definitely say look into this yourself and find ways of understanding it, because we might not necessarily be describing it in the perfect way. And also, the blanket sort of analogy is just that. It is just an analogy to help you kind of understand generally what's going on. Mm-hmm. So don't take it as, oh, this is yes, it's space is a blanket and planets are bowling
3D
balls.
3D blanket.
Yeah, it's not.
That's Newtonian physics.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not exactly that, but it's just an easier way of understanding it. According to that theory, according to that theory, time moves more slowly when gravity is stronger. Now, if you've seen Interstellar. You'll probably already know this.
Great,
yeah, so when gravity's stronger, time moves more slowly, which is why if you fall into a black hole, it's one of the reasons why if you fall into a black hole, you'll be falling pretty much infinitely, or at least feel like it's infinite, because time is like stretched out due to the gravity of a black hole.
Yeah.
Yeah? We've spoken about that a little bit before.
We have. We did have a black hole episode.
Yeah, we did have a black hole
episode. 17.
Weird that you know that.
Episode 17.
You're weird, man.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
It was the one with the perfect black body. Dan.
Yeah.
The perfect black body.
The perfect black body. So yeah, you know, gravity, when gravity is stronger, clocks tick slower. So you can see this on Earth. Not
relative
quite.
To things that aren't in the gravity.
Yes.
They tick at the same rate according to themselves.
Yeah. Okay. So this is when we say that clocks tick slower, this is the difficult thing. You need to bear in mind that when I say something does something slower, it's from the perspective of an outside observer. So
yes.
Bearing in mind, okay, from my point of view, right now, I have never moved in my life. Everything has moved around me. You know, I have been a constant, and everything's been moving. You can also think of the fact that right now, I think I'm sitting still on the still ground that isn't moving, but actually the Earth is spinning, and not only is the Earth is spinning around the Sun, but not only is the Earth spinning around the Sun is spinning around the central point of mass.
Flying through space.
Of our galaxy.
Of the galaxy,
and
yeah.
That galaxy is spinning around a central point of mass of a cluster of galaxies, and I assume those cluster of galaxies are spinning around a central point of mass, and nothing in
the
universe.
Where have
you
been that whole time?
Sat
here. You've been here.
Recording Sci-Guy.
I love that. What you were saying there, Corey, reminded me of this quote in a book called On Having No Head, which is a weird philosophy book. Mm. But it says, your body has moved around the world your whole life, but where have you been that whole time? You've been right here, on top of your shoulders.
Awful. Awful. Oh, it's just, but you think you've never been still for your entire life, and nothing, like pretty much everything in the universe is moving.
It's exhausting.
But according to relativity, you've stayed in one place.
Exactly.
And the whole universe has moved around.
This reminds me of Futurama.
It's a 3D treadmill.
Well, this is what
I
mean.
So when you spin, if you were to just, like, if you just spin now, I can't spin all the way around. Oh, I probably can't. Spin. Oh, I can't do it. But if you just spin 360 degrees, according to relativity, you've spun 360 degrees, or you've stayed still and the entire universe has rotated 360
degrees. But relative to you, the entire
in the opposite direction. Yeah.
Relative to you, the entire universe. And this is what I absolutely, one of my favorite things, and this is why Futurama is one of the best shows of all time, because they really do great science on there sometimes. Like, they make fun little jokes and stuff, and obviously a lot of it is a little bit silly, but there was a spaceship in it which didn't move itself, but in fact moved the entire universe around it, which... Yeah.
Is every spaceship.
Which was the explanation for how it could go faster than light.
Yeah, which is silly. It's ridiculously silly. But I genuinely love that, because kind of relative to you, You are not moving relative to you. You know, time is always going to be constant for you. But also, if you travel at the speed of light and then you stop traveling at the speed of light, time has gone the same. It's felt like the same speed for you, but for everyone else in the world, time would have been going much, much faster. So it's easier to say time has gone slower for you rather than time's gone faster for everyone else. But realistically, relative to you, time has gone faster for everyone else.
So both are true.
They mean the same thing, despite the fact that you both have experienced time at the same rate.
Yeah. That's why Interstellar is such a good film. I'm glad you brought it up, because, not to give away spoilers, but the plot follows a man who has to go into space, and he circles a black hole for a bit. He's basically near a black hole.
Mm.
And so he leaves his daughter back on Earth. And so his relative time and his daughter's relative time kind of move out of sync. And so they age differently. And it's very interesting to watch. It's a good film.
It's horrifying.
And every decision they make there is costing him
time with
time with their family and friends. Uh-huh. Like the more decisions they make, that's it. That's the currency
because
of the
relative so, relative to them, their children are aging really quickly.
Yeah. So there's one point of the film wherein a group of them have to go down to a planet, but the gravity is so strong on that planet that the person remaining on the ship is going to experience time much faster than the people on the planet. So they go down to the planet, things go wrong, and despite the fact that they're only there for a few hours, they come back up, and the person that was left on the ship had been there alone for what?
Like, I think it was 20 years.
Was it 20 years?
I think they were meant to go down to the planet for 15 minutes, which would cost maybe like 2 weeks for the person on the ship. But they get an accident. They end up being unconscious for like hours.
Yeah.
And when they get back to the ship, it's been 20 years. Like that person's been waiting there alone for like 20 years.
What do? You can't go down to the planet because that's the thing. You can't. It's a really, really interesting look at this kind of physics. And it is pretty faithful to I was gonna say the source material, but the source material is just
it's just science.
Einstein. It is fairly solid, and it does have some of these in ways that we can't necessarily experience, it does have some of these really, really interesting sort of outcomes from the scientific model that we've got. And actually you can kind of see this on Earth. So clocks at sea level tick at a different rate to clocks, say, at the top of Mount Everest. Now, obviously, each clock is ticking at the same rate relative to itself, but they're ticking at different rates relative to each other. And the thing with this is that the idea of simultaneous events, it feels like it breaks down. If you do this, it feels like it breaks down. It's very odd. So that is just basically an overview of general relativity and special relativity. Bear in mind, I'm a biologist. I'm not a physicist. I've done my absolute best on this, but I would genuinely recommend for you to go and find this out for yourself as well. We've got links in the description to, for further reading and for all of my sources. And if you've got any corrections or anything you want to add, please do leave it in the comments, because we really love getting those. We really love getting those things of saying, hey, you could have added this, or you could have included that. It's all in the interest of everyone learning. So go ahead and do that. But moving on now to the last part of our show. This is the Great Brain Robbery. Have you guys heard of this?
This is where they took Einstein's brain out.
They stole Einstein's brain. Yeah.
After he was dead, I assume.
That's well,
he, they didn't rob if, it out
if,
of
if
his
not,
head.
He would have
Where
been.
Has my brain gone?
Oh, it's more. Yeah, that's probably the.
The brain is like, where's my body gone?
Where's my. Yeah, it's exactly. Einstein would just be, where's
relative
my body?
Relative to the brain, the body is gone.
When I picture Einstein's brain, I picture a mustache on it. I don't know why.
And the little hair that's coming out the side. Yes. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If you say it's Einstein's whatever, it's got the hair and the mustache. It's just. It has
signature
to.
Look.
It's his look. It's his look. So, Einstein died in Princeton Hospital on April 18th, 1955, otherwise known as 39BL.
I heard about his death. That
you heard about his death, really? I just
I heard
about it.
I heard about it before that. I heard about his death. I don't know if this is true, but I remember hearing from somewhere that we don't actually know what Einstein's last words were, because the nurse that was by his bedside when
he died didn't
speak German.
Yeah.
That's really funny. But that could be true. I've not heard that. What I've heard is that actually he died of an aortic aneurysm, which basically means a blood vessel burst near his heart. And according to the American Museum of Natural History, when he was asked if he wanted to have surgery, Einstein said, "I want to go when I want to go. It's tasteless to prolong life artificially. I've done my share. It's time to go. I will do it elegantly." So the thing is, I think about last words, I think most last words we talk about aren't actually people's last words.
Yeah.
If someone is dying, right? Like if I'm dying, right? My, like, I'm not sitting there like, okay, hold on, wait, so what's the coolest thing for me to say right now? You know, I think last words are just, it's a funny idea that we come up with, but I do like, I do like, I have
meant
heard
to be
the
profound,
story.
Aren't they? Profound, yeah. Last words. I think a lot of people just are a bit out of it when they die, you know, like, they might speak a bit of gibberish.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Maybe he wasn't even speaking German. Maybe he was speaking gibberish and the nurse didn't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he could have absolutely said something in German that the nurse just didn't understand. And I think that'd be quite funny, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's lost to history.
His last words.
What did he say? So, yeah, he died of an aortic aneurysm. Now, there was a pathologist on call called Thomas Harvey. He chopped out Einstein's brain and nicked it. Now, here's the thing: Einstein didn't want anyone to, you know, to take his. Einstein didn't want anyone to take.
He didn't want to donate his body to science.
No, he left specific instructions to be cremated. And scatter the ashes secretly because he just didn't apparently didn't like the idea of people like sort of idolizing him, especially after he died.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it went. Sorry,
Albert. But yeah, so Harvey took the brain, and this is a great little story. So it only took a few days for people to notice that Einstein's brain was gone, and to me, I think a few days, that's a bit long. You should probably notice straight away that someone's brain isn't there. Not to say the least of the massive cut that you got to do into someone's skull.
The big hole in the head would be a good giveaway, wouldn't
it? I feel like generally dead bodies tend to not have their heads chopped off.
Yeah.
You know, like the top, it's like an egg. You know,
unless they did it through the nose like the Egyptians did.
Oh, you want to keep it intact, though, don't
that's
you?
That's stealth. You can put it back together.
Piece of back to like, oh.
How did this...
Okay, this has got to be frontal. This is the hardest jigsaw puzzle ever.
In it.
So it only took a few days for people to notice, and obviously it was against Einstein's wishes, but Einstein did have a son. He had two sons, in fact. One of them in particular, Hans Albert. That's an Albus Severus there, isn't it?
Hans Albert.
So Hans Albert gave Harvey permission to keep Einstein's brain, but only if he did it, you know, if anything he did to it had some scientific merit. So this begins our story of Harvey and Einstein's brain. Now, Harvey soon lost his job at Princeton Hospital, and then he took the brain to Philadelphia, where he chopped it up into 240 pieces, and he preserved it in a hard, rubbery kind of cellulose. And then he split it into two jars and put those jars in his basement. But then his wife, after a while, threatened to throw it out. So he went back to pick up the brain, and then took it with him to the Midwest. And there, he worked as a medical supervisor at a biological testing lab in Wichita, in Kansas, and kept the brain in a cider box under a beer cooler. But he moved again to Weston, Missouri, and then practiced medicine while he was trying to study the brain in his spare time. But then he lost his medical license in 1988 after failing a 3-day competency exam. And then he moved to Lawrence, Kansas, again, took an assembly line job in a plastic extrusion factory, and moved into a second floor apartment next to a gas station, and befriended a neighbor, a beat poet named William Burroughs. Now, those two guys met for drinks quite often on their front porch. Harvey would tell stories about the brain, about cutting chunks off to send to researchers around the world, and Burroughs would like tell everyone that he could get a piece of Einstein's brain whenever he wanted. Now, in 1985, Harvey and collaborators in California published the first study on Einstein's brain, and they claimed lots of stuff. They claimed it had an abnormal proportion of two different types of cells, the neurons and the glia. And that study was then followed by five others, and they happened, like, you know, a lot. That happened right through the 90s, and researchers behind the study said that studying Einstein's brain could help uncover the like sort of neurological reasons for why he was so smart. But that is complete nonsense. So this man stole Einstein's brain, got his son's permission, chopped it up, put it in a jar, put it in a cider box, took it with him around the country, and then started boasting about it, and then published papers on it. All of which, complete rubbish.
It's a lie.
It's not a lie. The papers were rubbish, as in the conclusions they drew were terrible.
Oh.
No, none of that is a lie. That all happened.
Oh.
Bloody hell, what a story.
What a waste of Albert Einstein's brain.
Right, and you've never heard this story before, right?
Never heard of that.
I didn't know about this until I started searching up Albert Einstein. I feel like his brain is something that we should know about, you know? But yeah. So in the original, so the reason that some of these, I'll give you some reasons that some of these studies were not great. In the original 1985 sort of study, Harvey and the people that were working with him found that in a specific area of the brain Einstein's sort of ratio of different types of cells were a lot smaller than in the 11 control brains that they used. Now, first off, they used 11 control brains and one Einstein brain. Not necessarily the best idea. but then also, the control group wasn't very controlled. Some of the brains were from 47 to 80 years old, whereas Einstein died at the age of 76. The control brains were fresh, whereas Einstein's had been, like, taken around the country, put in beer coolers, reserved. And, like, not really, you know, kept best care of. And then the worst one is that they counted the cells, and that's not necessarily, that's subjective, really. Like, you can't, there wasn't really a way to just count brain cells in a way that didn't kind of give not the best results. And on top of that, if you think about it, when you're studying one person's brain in comparison to everyone else's brains, you've got basically an N of one. You've got one brain to study, and you're putting it up against every other brain, and you're trying to find the differences between this one brain and everyone else's. Now, there is a lot of variation in humans. I'm sure if we took any one of our brains and tried to compare it to every other human, we'd be like, well, Luke's brain seems to have a much bigger frontal lobe than many other brains. That must point to his extreme intelligence. Well, naturally, it doesn't. Luke's brain is, you know, it's Luke's brain. It's barely functional. It's...
Wow. Didn't mean to hit so hard.
It works very well, Luke.
Nope, don't worry.
No, that's the thing. If you hold up one thing and try to find all the differences between it and something else, you're going to find a lot of differences, you know?
Yeah.
And so because you can't even understand whether the variations in the brain that you're looking at compared to the others are just sort of like normal fluctuations of sort of variance. You can't find out the statistical sort of reliability of it. You can't find out this sort of statistical, what's the word I'm looking for?
And you also can't draw any conclusion as to whether the fluctuation you are finding had anything to do with what you're doing the study about, which is why was this man such a genius?
Exactly, yeah.
It could be why he drank loads of water, or why he was really friendly, or like there's loads of things it could mean. And you're just picking this one random variable and being like, why that?
It's because he has more of these cells.
Oh, it's the first thing we tested for.
Maybe a better, because this is the thing. Holding up Einstein as being the smartest man in the world is like he absolutely was one of the absolute best scientists of the 20th century. However, there are probably people that are just as smart as Einstein that aren't applying themselves to what he did. There's more to being the smartest man in the world than being the smartest man in the world. It takes a lot of work to do what he did. And some people don't put in that work. Some people don't have the resources that he had. Some people don't have the education. And it just seems silly to me to study a man's brain as the sole reason for him being smart, rather than all of the other factors that went into it. So that's the thing. There is no way to know if, there's no way to know if X variable in Einstein's brain is what made him smart or anything. You just know that there's that thing in his brain, you know, that's literally all it tells you. Oh, we found that Einstein had this little lump in his brain. What does that tell us about Einstein's smarts? Oh, doesn't tell you anything. It tells you Einstein had a lump in his brain.
The lump is responsible for his intelligence.
Literally. It's like if you
is
were
what
to...
I've deduced.
It's just, it makes just as much sense as saying, oh, Einstein had this mole on his back. Must be why he's so smart. It has to be. I've not found anyone else with that mole, and no one else is that smart. So... it's got to be, right?
It's all in the mole.
It's all in the mole.
There's extra brain in the mole.
You chop off the mole, right? He's not going to be quite as smart.
Dumb.
I promise you.
Dumb.
Yeah.
IQ drops by 60 straight away.
IQ is another thing that it's ridiculous. It's silly. It doesn't work. But that is the story of Einstein. That's the story of Einstein's great brain robbery. There you go. That's
it. His brain was stolen.
Yeah, I can't believe his brain was actually stolen. And then it was
He doesn't know.
But the rest of him was cremated and scattered as he wanted. So, you know, that's all right.
The rest of him, what was left?
Where's his brain now?
I think his brain might be in museums now.
In all the little
240
pieces.
Different places.
Yeah, it could be in 240 different places, couldn't it? Yeah, it could be in lots of places.
It is in the Mutter Museum. Is one of only two places in the world where you can see pictures of Einstein's brain, pictures of Einstein's brain, and brain sections 20 microns thick.
Probably cooking up into something.
So there you go. Not much of it really, is there?
No, there's really not much brain. So that is our show for today, but it's not quite there yet. Like I said at the top of the show, this was brought to you by our lovely patrons over at patreon.com /SciGuys. Every single month, our patrons get the choice, they get the chance to submit and vote on topics along with some other bonus content like bonus episodes and access to every single SciGuys live. What a great time over there on Patreon, don't we think?
They're having the best time. But sorry,
best time. Not to mention the lovely Discord that we've got going on there, cultivating a nice little community.
Yeah, the SciGuys community.
Yeah, we've got 50 patrons right now, and it's really great.
That is too many.
It's too many, but it's not too many.
Please, we need more.
It's not too many. It's not enough, actually. We need more. Every single time we do this, you say it's too many.
Because it keeps going up, and I'm like, that. I can't picture 50 people.
It's never too many. If you're not a patron,
I won't be satisfied until we get to
infinity. You guys really
infinity.
Know how to dig yourselves into holes, don't you?
So we have 50 patrons. That is absolutely fantastic. But you know what? We're not quite
it's
there
not
yet. Not there yet. I want to be able to buy a rocket ship to go to space. And for that, we need lots more patrons. So go ahead and join.
I want to be able to fly to a black hole so we can do a live stream of relativity in action. Although it would just
as
look
we
like
get
normal.
Spaghettified.
Yeah, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? That's our goal.
Would the live stream move really slowly?
And only then will I be satisfied.
If we hit... What's an achievable number to say a black hole? If we hit £50 billion... Per month.
No way.
That's not enough.
No, it'll be in the trillions.
Four quadrillion.
Yeah, per month. We build up to it.
We get
to 50 billion a month and then we save.
But seeing as we haven't yet taken a person to Mars, I think the price is going to be pretty high.
We just wait for a while. All we need to do is develop technology to keep us alive for a long time and then a rocket ship.
We could also just use our Patreon money to go really fast. And then slow down and we'll be in the future where they've probably already invented it.
Oh, that's true. We could do that. Or we could just use our Patreon money. So if we've got enough Patreon money, we can just compress it and it'll turn into a black hole.
That's true. We could do it from home. Let's
make your own black hole DIY.
Destroy all our Patreon money.
So with that, we are also going to, for the very last time, thank all of our patrons. Because we have so many of you lovely people, we... are no longer
going
to
read anymore.
We're not going to be able to read.
Next month, we're not going to have enough time in the episode
to
read out all the names.
It's getting to the point where reading out all these names is going to take a long time. So what we're going to do instead is at the end of every single episode, we're going to have all of our patrons there and displayed on the screen. And every month in the Patreon vote episode, what we'll be doing is we'll be reading out all of the new patrons for that month. Mm-hmm. So don't worry, if you're a new patron, we'll still read you out. And if you're an old patron, you're going to be getting a lot more exposure. So don't you even worry about that. Don't you worry your pretty little head. But... for the last time, for all of our patrons, here we go. We've got a thank you for Levy Cardwell.
Thank you to Jaden.
Thank you to Danny Potter.
Thank you to Atlas.
Thank you to Taylor Gajan.
Thank you to Nika ZS.
Thank you to Marta DeGrave.
Thank you to Joanna Heidig.
Thank you to Baymax.
Thank you to Hope Megan McCaffrey.
Thank you to Zach DeZil.
Thank you to Lawrence Van Hofslot.
Thank you to Jay Fernandez.
Thank you to Allison Kiff.
Thank you to Lara McMahon.
Thank you, Olivia Haig.
Thank you to Harriet McLelland.
Thank you to Poppy Fletcher.
Thank you, Charlie Taylor.
Thank you to Evelyn.
Thank you to Katie Byrne.
Thank you to Mia Jones.
Thank you to my father, Gaza.
Hi, Dave. Oh, lovely.
Thank you to Alexandra Tyan.
Thank you to Krishna Riddhi.
Thank you to Marissa.
Thank you to Noah Nilsson.
Thank you, Clay Holly.
Thank you to Mitchell.
Thank you to Eve.
Thank you to Beth.
Thank you to Daisy B. Flett.
Thank you to Laura.
Thank you, Rebecca Egan.
Thank you to Natasha.
Thank you to Phoenix Wilkes.
Thank you, Quinn Hall.
Thank you, George Farron.
Thank you, Omar Garcia.
Thank you, Brianna.
And thank you to my mother, Anne.
Oh, lovely.
Both of my parents are patrons.
Thank you to Paul Olson.
Thank you, Tobias Schaffel.
Thank you to Ella Hellesy.
Thank you, Alice Blecker Loyalion. Thank you, Alice.
Thank you, Natalia.
Thank you to Landy Manderson.
Thank you to Hiccup.
Thank you to me, Standin.
And thank you to the worst patron of all, the one we like the least on this podcast. Thank you to Luke Cutforth, unfortunately.
Hey! Hey! And that's the last time the name Luke Cutforth will ever be said on this podcast.
Can we block someone on Patreon?
You can actually block someone on Patreon.
Go on, block me, I dare you.
We don't want your money.
Thank you all again for listening to this episode. I mean, this is one of our favorite things to do, and we love the Patreon vote episodes. We love the patrons, and we'd love for you to become one. So head over to patreon.com/SciGuys and sign on up.
Make the list longer.
Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
I am not Corey everywhere.
I'm Jampkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.